I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, morning, afternoon, evening, however you're listening, whenever you're listening, thank you very much for doing so. This is Writer's Routine. This week, we're chatting to Naomi Ishiguro. Her debut novel is Common Ground. It's a coming-of-age story about friendship in an increasingly divided world. We talk about why she likes her writing spaces to be impersonal and practical. Also, how the tricky last third always seems to resolve itself. And when you're like Naomi, when you've studied creative writing and now you teach it too, how much do you think about the rules that you've learned when you come to write it yourself?
I always imagine it being the case with like great musicians. You learn all the theory and you get it all in as muscle memory, and then you just got to like let your creativity free and just not be like thinking about how you're, you know, doing the technique of the finger picking, but because you've done it so many times in practice, your hands just do it naturally. I think that's what I try and do for my approach. We'll see if it's worked.
There is more on the way with Naomi on this week's Writer's Routine. Yes. Hello, my name's Dan. Welcome along. This is Writer's Routine, where we take a look inside an author's day to get some inspiration and motivation to try and sort out our own. Now, this week, the debut novelist Naomi Ishiguro is on the show. She's published an acclaimed short story collection already. It's called Escape Routes, and her debut novel has just come out. It's called Common Ground. She started writing it around 2016? Yeah, that year, when everything in the world just changed, really. It's strange, isn't it? Because it's so recent, yet it feels so long ago. I guess after 2020, everything feels an age ago. But Brexit happened, Trump became president, and no matter what your politics are, it felt seismic, didn't it? It all felt different, like things were changing. And it gave Naomi the idea for her new novel, her debut, Common Ground. It's all about Stan, who starts at a new school at a time of huge upheaval in his life, and he meets Charlie, who starts to change his world. It's a coming-of-age novel, and it's one of those debuts that feel like it's the start of something really special. We talk about where she writes, how she likes it to be completely neutral and impersonal. Also, you can hear how teaching creative writing helped her iron out things when they became a little bit difficult for her. And we chat through why writing her second novel is proving much trickier than her debut, as I think it often does. And we start the show, as we always do, with what Naomi Ishiguro sees around her in the place where she sits down to write.
So where I write tends to vary quite a lot. I used to write in libraries a lot. I'm a member of the London Library, and I used to, my boyfriend's family live in Brighton, so I love writing in the Millennium Library there. So hopefully if I was writing in one of those, it would be like a big window, and in Brighton you get to see a lot of seagulls, a lot of sky because it's quite high up. And I kind of like the impersonal thing of writing in a library as well. It's just sort of having a clean desk at the end of the day. Yeah.
Expand that impersonality of it. I've spoken to many writers before, and quite a lot of them like to curate their writing space. They like things on the walls, maybe trinkets and talismans, I guess, that remind them what's going on. So, you know, it's their like cockpit, as it were. What is it about things that are impersonal that get you excited about writing?
I think it's partly like anyone that knows me, I have a problem, like every time I move house, I've just got so much stuff and I'm always throwing things away. I just accumulate stuff everywhere and everything's always cluttered. So I think sitting in a writing space with tons of things around me that all kind of mean something, I'd find that quite hectic and just quite sort of just difficult. And it would just sort of be encroaching a little bit on my brain. So to be able to sit somewhere, everything's sort of calm and that I haven't, there's nothing around that sort of has a significance to me particularly, it's probably quite kind of, it's like a blank canvas, I think, probably quite helpful. I also just, you know, like people watching and, you know, all that.
If it is a blank space, if you are quite minimalist with, you know, your space and where you're working, what are the things that you do allow yourself? Like when you head to libraries, do you take something with you? Is it just you and the laptop? Is it you with a notebook as well for ideas? Talk us through, I guess, kind of what's in the bag when you head there.
I don't go to the library anymore because of the pandemic. So this is all very much in an ideal world. I don't type my first draft. So I will take a notebook if I'm doing my first draft and I write everything by hand. So literally just a notebook and a pen and often things I'm reading that are helpful. Maybe if I'm doing research. It's really quite, I try and keep it quite simple. I don't like having too many rituals or too many things that I sort of can't write without, because I think especially in my early 20s, I was moving a lot. And if you have too many sort of inbuilt kind of mechanisms that allow you to write, then it becomes quite difficult when you move house and everything changes. Just literally notebook.
So writing in a notebook, then your first draft, why is that the way that you do things? Why do you need that connection to a notebook before you type things up?
I think it's literally just the way I grew up. Like I slightly missed that whole thing of growing up with typing. I think it was the last, probably you too, the last generation where you were like handwriting stuff at school. And I sort of realized at university, just a few essays I handed in that I tried to write, like typed first, they were just a lot less good. They just, the sentences got a bit garbled because I'd been trying to edit them as I was going. And they were just, that like my train of thought hadn't been as fluid and it hadn't just come out as, I don't know, yeah, coherently. So I just kind of realized that I'm just not someone that can string ideas together very well on a computer. So it's just, the quality is just much better if I sit down and try and handwrite it, because my brain to hand was just trained up as a child. And it's not so intuitive to type stuff. Like it doesn't, the connection just isn't there.
It's amazing. I've completely lost that. Mm. Like I've completely lost that. I was with you. I think we're of similar age. So yeah. I was that person at school. I was taught to write. And I write so little now. If I do ever need to, it's honestly like trying to walk again. Like I just struggle so much. In the time when you've written your first draft then and you're kind of moving it on to later drafts on the laptop, we're kind of shooting this question quite early, but I'm interested. What's that process like? Like, how do you transfer something from a nice, romantic, kind of clear-cut notebook to then editing as you go onto the laptop? Just talk about that step.
Well, that's a really important step, actually. Well, first, I do a thing where I take photographs of all my notebook pages. So my camera roll on my phone is just like insane looking. I'm terrified of losing them, because if I'm like writing in libraries all the time and I'm flitting between Brighton and London and all of that, I'm just terrified I'll just leave it on the train or something. And that would be hours of work, obviously, if it's just there's no backup. So I try and back everything up by taking photographs. And it's helped in the past, actually, because you can just bring up the image and type it out and you've got the words back. I think that process of transferring from handwritten to on the screen is a really good part of the editing process to me. Like it's quite helpful. I'm not quite sure why. I think I just kind of notice then anything that's a bit unclear, or I automatically kind of start as I type up, I sort of refine it a little bit. I try not to. I think that's it. I try and second guess myself. I try to just type it up as clean as like as exactly as it's written. And then the few things that I'm like, oh, I have to change that though, that's usually the things that actually do need to be changed.
How much do things normally change between, like if you try not to change it a lot, how similar is your second draft on a laptop compared to your first draft on the page?
It probably is quite similar. It's probably quite similar. Yeah, it varies, of course. And I'll do it at different stages. Like with Common Ground, I wrote it in sort of part one, part two, and part three. And from what I remember, I typed up the whole of part one once I finished it. And then I had still had part two sort of going in a notebook. And then I typed up part two sort of the end of that. So I won't just type a whole book in one go. That would be a nightmare. Yeah.
But what's interesting is that you've published short stories before, but this is your debut novel that you've published. Now, I'm sure you've kind of worked on novels in the past. Everyone's got them kicking around their desk. But as you go on, like if this book is successful and then you have to write many, many more books through the years, is this a process that you're kind of comfortable carrying on?
I don't know. I do think about this. And I wonder whether, like, you know, writing is something I'm going to sort of do all the time. Is this one of these things? Because it is quite laborious writing everything out and then typing it. And it just didn't quite feel that efficient. It just felt the most efficient way to do something deeply inefficient kind of at the time. So I'm not really sure. I think with each book, it will probably vary. Having said I'd like to handwrite everything, I've been trying to type something up recently because I just found myself like type the first draft because I found myself just bewildered in notebooks. I just couldn't see the work clearly anymore. I just felt like I was just seeing loads of like handwritten mess essentially. So I feel like from book to book, the process will probably vary because like the form's going to be different and the way you write it necessarily has to change with what the project is.
What did you enjoy most about the process and the form from the first one that you would like to try and be consistent through your novels?
I think I tried to write it in a way that felt quite honest, and I didn't want to feel like I was trying to sound like my sentences were very nice or elegant or writerly, or I was trying to sort of operate almost the like kill your darlings principle, but from the first draft, like not as an editing thing, but just, yeah, if anything seemed too flowery or like I was just kind of getting lost in a description for the sake of it, I was just kind of like, no, who's that for really? Is it just for me to make myself feel clever? So I think I was just trying to keep things very like quite direct and quite, I hate the word so unpretentious, like, oh, I was being so unpretentious, but like trying to make it.
Yeah, it's almost pretentious by definition, isn't it? That, yeah.
I know. Yeah, that's it. But just try to be quite honest in it and just with the voice and not try and seem more literary than like people are and than I am. I think that was a good exercise with kind of every sentence in it. And I would like to keep that up, definitely.
How would you know when a sentence wasn't right? When you're rereading them and, you know, as you're writing or then when you're transferring it onto the laptop, what was it about a sentence that set the alarms going that, hang on, maybe this is not what I want?
I think if I'd used kind of words that become very popular, the word crepuscular always comes out of me. Like, it's a great word. People love it. I love it. But if I'd used that word, I would never use that word. Like, I just wouldn't. So if I'd said something like that, I'd be like, am I just copying someone though? Is that really what I want to say here? Like, is it necessary? And I think it's also like the rhythms of a sentence. I was trying to keep the rhythms very, I don't know what it was. There was a kind of just like a rhythm to the book and the voice. And having said I work in libraries, I do, but I sort of read aloud in my head quite a lot as I'm writing. And if the sentence doesn't fall in the right rhythm, I'll sort of just, I'll change it. It won't, it, yeah. I know that it doesn't fit. In an ideal world, I would just take it. I've been very lucky with Common Ground and the last year. So I was sort of basically able to do it full time, give or take a few days. So I would treat it like a 9-to-5. Like I would just get up about 7, commute into central London, sit down and take out my water bottle and whatever I was doing. If it was the first draft, just use my notebook, you know, just, it's very boring. Just kind of clock in the hours really, have lunch for like half an hour while I read a book and then go back to it, leave about 6. Like it was literally that dull. But like it didn't feel dull because I was writing a book, but when you actually look at it, it doesn't look like much.
So why are you keeping those hours then? If you're a writer, and as you say, you were lucky enough that you could dedicate it pretty much every day to this over the last 18 months or so, when you've got that liberty, why are you sticking to a traditional 9-to-5 that so many people want to get out of? Why are you not writing at bizarre hours of the day, you know, getting your work done early so you can go and do stuff in the afternoon, or doing it late? Like, why are you keeping to that kind of normal structure when you don't have to at all?
I think it's a very, that's a good question. I kind of think that when people want to escape the 9-to-5, it's probably the actual work rather than the schedule that's the problem, really. And if you like what you do, then it's actually just a very, like, there's a reason why capitalism sort of settled on, you know, well, it's not really 9-to-5 anymore, like 8:30 till 6:30, but, you know, like it's an efficient way to use the day. And if I'm doing what I want to be doing and writing a book, why wouldn't I, as my own boss, kind of choose to use the day in the same way, but for what I want to use it for, if I'm lucky enough to do that. So I think that was kind of my thinking. And so much of writing a novel is just putting in the time and being quite disciplined about it. And I'm not someone that can just sort of drift around and sort of come up with something amazing. I would just I'd do nothing at all, or I would do something completely different. So I think that's why. Recently I found it harder working from home because the sort of schedule and the boundaries just aren't really there. So I found doing slightly more weird things, like sort of getting up very, very early and writing in the early hours of the morning, and all that kind of helps a bit more if you're stuck at home. But yeah, in an ideal world, I really do like the kind of standard. I think it's like switching your brain on as well. It's such a like high intensity brain work thing to do, to be writing a book, that it's just nice to have the boundaries and to be in the pattern. Like, you know that at a certain time of day, your brain just turns on and it's used to doing that. So you sort of do that, and then you're at sort of peak, whatever it is, for a few hours, and then you can sort of edit or whatever in the afternoon. It's just quite, yeah, handy to have the routine.
So when you get there at 9 o'clock, how good are you at instantly getting to the work? How do you find your energy and, you know, your focus, as you mentioned before, how do you find that flows during the day with your concentration?
I think the pattern helps, as I was saying before, because this all feels quite theoretical because, yeah, I haven't been going to the library, and it hasn't been going this well since the pandemic started and working from home. But if I go to the same place and start at the same time every day, I find actually it's quite easy just to click back into it. I'm just quite excited to be starting it. And with the commute, you're sort of quite excited throughout it to start on what you're doing. You sit down, you just sort of start it immediately because that's what you do. My concentration throughout the day, usually it's, if I'm enjoying what I'm doing, it's usually pretty fine. I think that's the weird thing about writing, though. It's sort of a blessing and a curse. You can lose the 8 hours to it in one go, and it feels like only an hour has passed, and that's great because it's working, but then it's also like, where did the day go? So I'm always this sort of frantic person that doesn't have enough time to do anything. And I'm like, why is there no time in the day? And everyone else is like, what's wrong with you?
How much of those 8 hours are planned? As in, do you know exactly what you're going to work on? I mean, have you got some form of overarching structure for the story? And you think, right, today I'm going to crack off 1,000 words of chapter 7. When you sit down at 9, how much do you know what you want to get done before 5?
Probably quite a lot. With the first part of Common Ground, I didn't plan part 1 because I was sort of feeling out the project, but I had a clear sense of what the final scene, not the final scene, but like the sort of climax to part 1. I kind of knew what that was going to be. And there's a kind of Neil Gaiman quote where he says that the handiest thing is when the thing that comes to you about a story kind of varies. Sometimes you get the idea for the beginning first, sometimes you get a scene from the middle, but the handiest is when you kind of see the end, and all you have to do is just sort of aim for it. So I didn't actually plan part 1, but I just like aimed for that final scene and just allowed myself to get to know the project. Part 2, I sat down and planned out every scene and like the beats that I wanted to hit. And I did it all in one go in Brighton, in the Millennium Library over there. And then I sort of adjusted and adapted as I realized, oh, we actually need another scene for that to happen with that character, and that character needs to realize this, so I need to add in another bit there. But then I just sort of adjust my plan. And then I sort of sit down and be like, right, we're nailing this bit today. And then just sort of write that scene. But I wouldn't write as much as 1,000 words a day, I don't think. I don't know that many writers. I don't know, maybe I do. Some people do that, I think. I know a few people that sort of write books very, very fast, but I think the quality would probably drop off after about 800 words. I don't know. It varies. Some days you're just in the flow and you write like 2000. I honestly don't know. It really varies.
There's a few things there that I want to pick up on. So just about the word count, really. If you find yourself kind of dropping off about 800, is that does every word kind of need to be perfect for you? Or are you happy overwriting and you're just writing, 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 and you know that you're going to have to cut and kill your darlings, as you mentioned earlier? Or are you desperately trying to find the perfect word to come next?
Having said that about 800 words, I think talking about what I'm writing now, which is, much more of a mess than Common Ground was. I think with Common Ground, when I was doing the first draft, I actually wasn't aware of how many words I was writing because I was writing in a notebook. And I was trying not to really edit myself at all. I just knew that if I stuck to the beats that I had in the plan, like I'd plan out each scene and I'd know like the setting, which characters were in it, almost like a play. And I knew like what were the key like emotional turning points and realizations that needed to happen in that scene. And I sort of knew that as long as I hit those five things, the draft would kind of be fine and salvageable at some point. So I would kind of just get that out and try and like live inside it as I was writing it and not really think about words or anything and just handwrite it. So I honestly have no idea how many words they would be. I think it's more like editing when I'm typing stuff up and thinking about it and sort of refining it a bit more. I would try not to do too many words in one go. I think the process has changed. Like it was a while ago I wrote Common Ground, and that it all kind of went quite smoothly. But I've sort of forgotten how I did it, and now I'm trying to write this other book and it's not going smoothly at all. so I feel like I'm sort of saying different things about my writer's routine now. But that book was just such a blessing. Like when I'm talking about it now, it sounds so like smug. Like, no, I was concentrating all the time. And like the emphasis now is I'm totally in the opposite of that at the moment. And everything's going terribly. No, it's not. But I'm finding writing quite hard. But with Coming Around, it just came to me kind of almost all in one go. And I just kind of urgently wanted to write it. And I knew what it had to be. So there weren't really any side streets or like diversions or anything. Like I just really wanted to get it all down and sort of finished. And it was just very, very clear. Like it was just like some weird, it just came to me in one go, pretty much. Even when I didn't quite know what the plot of part two would be, and I was sort of still feeling my way in part one, I knew like what the theme should be and what kind of book it should be. I think it was just a lucky strike, that one. It just kind of, I think some books just turn up.
If you're finding the second book harder, what are you doing to make it more bearable then? If it's nowhere near as plain sailing as Common Ground was, how are you kind of, what are you doing to help yourself out, I guess?
I think not a lot of things that consciously, because I don't quite know what to do. I should listen to your podcast, I suppose, and listen to all the other writers a bit more. I have listened to it, but just get some more tips. I think I teach children creative writing, and I think that's unconsciously been quite helpful. Like I didn't set out to like learn from it, but when you're thinking about how to help other people with their writing, and how to like kind of scaffold lessons, like how to go step by step so that you don't sort of lose anyone kind of midway and they're like, oh, I'm stuck, I don't have an idea. Cause that's kind of where I'm at, like, oh, I'm stuck. So having thought about those techniques for like helping other people put together stories, that has just unconsciously been quite helpful to me when I'm doing my own writing. Cause I can sort of think, oh, what was I telling them yesterday? Okay, so what exercise did I make them do? Okay, why was I asking them to do that? Because this, okay, I need to do this. So that's been quite helpful. I also find getting up really early in the morning and just writing before any emails come in and before, the day gets started, it feels like there's less pressure in a way, because kind of like everyone else is asleep, it doesn't really matter if you achieve nothing in those hours. Like it's just, I don't know, it feels different.
So much of writing, I've heard, so much of writing is almost tricking your brain into realizing that it's not doing what it's actually doing. And getting up in the morning is, you're kind of catching it off guard and you're still in this kind of fugue state. Totally. The first novel is Common Ground. Naomi, talk about the very first moment that the idea for this story came into your head. How did it present itself to you?
I was. I think I used to live, I spent a short time after I graduated from my master's degree. There's a writer called Rebecca Stott, and she lives in Norwich, and she teaches at UEA where I was studying. And she was looking for a lodger. She has this amazing house that's like a stately home. It was a like an old museum. She was looking for some writing lodgers just to live there. So I spent a few months just kind of living in this amazing place with this big room and a window. And I can't quite remember, I was sort of writing, I sort of knew what I was, I can't quite think of the exact moment, but I think the moment that the sort of book came together, and I don't, it's sort of hard to describe, but there's this thing, and it didn't even make, it was in the book, and then I had to delete it from the book because it didn't really make any sense in the context of anything else. But they have this, I'm going to describe it wrong. It's like in Norwich, there's this this day in September where all these lorry cabs like go in a big procession, and there's tons and tons of them, like hundreds, and they all drive all the way from Norwich to Yarmouth, and they like, back, like beat their horns the whole way, and there's kids who are like disadvantaged children in various ways from a kids charity. I said that so badly, but I don't know the full story. But they ride up in the lorry cabs so they for the whole procession, and it goes, and people like line the streets. And I hadn't heard of this at all because I lived in a different area of Norwich for the years that I was there, but I could see it, the whole thing, from my window. And I kind of thought it was amazing. I was just like, I've never seen anything like this. And I kind of loved the story and the idea of, and then I was like messaging my mom about it. And she was remembering because her grandpa used to work for a carpet factory in Glasgow, and he had a lorry. And she was remembering being a little kid riding up in the lorry cab and like being able to see like so far, and it being amazing, being so high up. And I was just thinking, I don't know, I just really loved it. It just made me really happy, and I could just watch the whole thing from my window. And I think that sense of like local news and sort of weird little local things happening that really were like the point of everything, like the kind of, I don't know, I was just like, it's stuff like this that I want to make this book about, is the small human stories that no one really tells you about. Like being like, when I lived in London or I was in Bath, I never heard about the Norwich to Yarmouth lorry parade. Like no one talks about it beyond there, but I was like, why not? And I kind of wanted to tell a story about the amazing things, just like those stories that just happen. Those kind of brilliant moments. And I think that was the moment that it really did come together.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
We'll have more from Naomi in just a sec. Now, I've just added a brand new tier over on our Patreon page, patreon.com/writersroutine. If you enjoy the episodes that we release weekly, more or less weekly, and if you've learned something that has helped the way that you write, that's where you need to go to support the show. And if you've ever wanted me to ask a question that I've never really got round to, something about the craft that you really want to know, if you're listening in and you think, oh, Why hasn't Dan asked that question? Well, I can ask it for you. There is a way that you can make that happen. Over on this brand new Patreon tier, it will get you a bonus episode every few months full of your questions. Your questions that you send to me and I ask them to writers on your behalf. And the episode, the bonus episode, will only be available to those backers. Now, this main Friday show, it will remain free as a bird for you. But if you want me to pose your questions to the authors that I interview, you can make that happen. Now, this might be a little working progress at the start. If you do back us straight away, just give us a little bit of time. I think the episode will be released more or less every 3 months, but it kind of depends how many questions I get as and when. We'll figure that out as we go, but you can help it get started, really. Head over to patreon.com/writersroutine and support the show over there. Right, let's get back to it then with Naomi Ishiguro talking about her debut novel, Common Ground. In this part, we talk about the tricky last third of the book and how she manages to push through it. Also, how much thought she gives to making us care about these characters. Like, how naturally does that come? And we pick things up talking about the new novel, Common Ground, and how the idea for it came into her brain.
I was sort of seeking a new project because I liked escape routes, but as with any first book, that's my short story collection, as with any first book, that's always something that you look back at and you're like, oh, that just didn't work, I didn't like that, that didn't quite link, or like, what was I thinking, that just didn't communicate at all. And yeah, I am proud of it, but it felt very messy, and it felt like I was getting out something, like a whole kind of imaginative world that I was kind of quite obsessed about when I was sort of a teenager, like all the sort of dark fairy tales and all of that. And I think the whole time I was editing it, because I spent quite a long time sort of editing it and working on it, I was wanting to write something that felt kind of bigger and more like me now. And yeah, that sort of tapped into a lot of the things I was thinking about. It was sort of around 2016 and the EU referendum and all of that. You know, everyone in the country just thought about Brexit for like an entire year. That was just all we thought about. So I think I wanted to write that, all that stuff was kind of, I was like, I want to write the novel about this, but I didn't know how. So that, yeah, it was all just kind of there. Like I wanted to write a better book than Escape Routes, and I knew it had to be something sort of around I don't know, belonging and Britain and England and kind of solidarity and all of those themes. And I guess I was sort of looking for the way into that project. So I was sort of seeking out a new project in that way. I was like, how am I going to write this? Where's it going to come from? What's the hook? Like, who are the characters? But I knew I wanted to do that sort of from a long time ago.
2016, like when we look back on it, it will be the maddest year ever. Like whatever your opinion, people's opinions are about all of these things, but you know, Brexit and Trump were quite seismic world events. And also here in the UK, like everyone died. Anyone famous that had ever lived suddenly died. Like, what's going on? Anyway, so you've got this, you know, you've seen the Norwich lorry trip to Yarmouth, and you think this will be a nice theme, a nice idea for a story. Where does the plot come from that? How do you go, okay, this is what I want to write about. Now I need some characters. Now I need something for the characters to do. How do they come into it?
They just sort of appeared. I think writing the first is the worst answer, isn't it? They just sort of appeared. I absolutely hate that. Sorry. But I think the Yarmouth lorry thing helped me understand. I hadn't written them yet, but there's a character called Charlie in the book who he picks up lots of local history things like that. And he has this kind of like idea forming in his head about what's important and what kind of stories people should be telling and kind of what this country really is. And he's sort of always piecing them together, and they're kind of different from the stories that you might learn at school or in history, or, you know, it's not like Tudors. It's there's a story that does, like the lorry cabs was initially one of the stories that he'd picked up on. But I had to delete that because he just had too many stories in the end. But the one that made it in was it's like the story of these Glaswegian factory workers in the 70s who refused to repair these Rolls-Royce fighter jets because they realized they'd been used for the military coup in Chile. So they like down tools in solidarity and just kept them, the engines, rusting and just refused to mend them for years and years. And in the end, they just, it's a very strange story. The engine just disappeared in the middle of the night. So that's a whole other thing. But that story of solidarity isn't one you learn at school, but he just is a character that sort of picks up on these stories that he thinks are important. And I think seeing the lorries, I think I sort of got a sense of that, a character that kind of goes around and he doesn't quite know why, but he's sort of collating these things because it's important to him. The other character was sort of more obvious, I guess. He's this sort of young kid who's kind of a more standard coming of age character. He's dealing with bullies at school and problems with his mom and all of that. I don't know, he just sort of appeared and it's the story of their friendship, really. And then the plot just came out of how they interacted, I think.
When you're talking about these characters and you know, one is a coming of age character and typically, and you what was your master's in? Was it in a form of creative writing?
Yes, I did a MFA in creative writing, yeah.
So when you are writing this novel, well, and in effect, when you're writing anything that you write, how much are you thinking about what you've learned when you are writing? You know, how much are you thinking about beats that you have to hit, what makes something read well, use of words, use of pace? How much are you thinking about these things as you tell your story?
I'm not really thinking about them at all, but I just think through years of like just building them in, it's almost that thing with, I don't know if it's the case, but I always imagine it being the case with like great musicians. You learn all the theory and you get it all in as muscle memory. And then you just got to like let your creativity free and just not be like thinking about how you're, you know, doing the technique of the finger picking, but because you've done it so many times in practice, your hands just do it naturally. I think that's what I try and do for my approach. We'll see if it's worked.
with these characters, with Stan and Charlie, if you know so much about them, and it's these characters that are going to keep us going, they're gonna pull us through the plot. Pull's a terrible word. They're gonna, you know, lead us nicely through the plot in that we want to repeat. You know what I mean? How do you make? How much do you think about whether us as the audience, whether we care about them as much as you do when you're writing them in Brighton Library?
Oh, wait, so that's like how do I make sure the audience care about them? Or
yeah, like how are you making these characters relatable and accessible and that we care about them, I guess?
I think I didn't really think about it that much when I was writing them, but I think I held faith with the sort of alchemy of the process, that if I cared enough about them and I sort of really, yeah, I really loved them as characters, then the readers would see that as well. It was a very strange thing because I felt like I knew them and I cared about them and they were like real people and I really wanted to just like get them down. And I thought that if I did, then everyone else would sort of feel the same about them as I did. I didn't really question it, but yeah, now that I'm writing this other book and it's harder, I do have to sort of think about like I was saying, like with the creative writing, teaching it to children and thinking like, how do you make your reader sort of care about your characters? And I sort of do think more about sort of, you know, more not tricks but like more techniques and sort of strategies for that kind of thing. But with Common Ground, I didn't really think about it. I was just sort of blindly sure that it would work for better or for worse.
So what techniques and what tricks are you thinking about now with the second and teaching children of?
I haven't really applied this in my own writing as yet, but I was sort of thinking about it the other day and sort of characters, thinking about sort of how to create characters that your reader loves, making them relatable. And from the beginning, I kind of feel like just tricks, like showing them in a really vulnerable position, like, or in a position where they're not sort of polished and perfect, or where something's slightly going wrong in their lives, or they're quite vulnerable. Then if you show them like that at the beginning, then your reader immediately empathizes with them and thinks, oh, I want to look after this person, rather than thinking, oh, they're all sorted out and fine. Like, that person might be a threat. Like, it's just a natural protective instinct. Or if you see Like there's a book called Rooftoppers by Catherine Rundle, which is an amazing book. And the first chapter is so short, but it introduces one of the main characters so beautifully, called Charles. And the first thing you see him doing is sort of picking this little child out of the water after a shipwreck, and deciding that he's going to look after her. And just seeing a character sort of make that decision to like look after a vulnerable person as well, like a small child, you immediately just love that character just immediately, because you think, oh, what a lovely thing to do. So yeah, just tricks you, yeah, that, you know, seeing someone make the decision to care for something vulnerable, seeing a vulnerability, I think is something that does sort of get it tricks readers into liking your characters. That's not what I mean at all, but it's a good thing to be aware of.
And lastly, you've gone through kind of the answer before, but I just thought we'd go over it again. This was your first novel, which is obviously a big undertaking, and you've said your second one is proving less easier than the first. What did you learn about writing a novel that will carry, that will kind of serve you well as you continue writing novels?
I wish I knew the answer to that, because it would be very helpful currently in my writing. I think that I found part three very hard. So parts one and two I wrote very quickly, and they all, yeah, when I said all, the whole book came to me. It sort of did thematically, and I knew sort of how the ending should feel, but how the ending should actually literally be on the page took quite a long time to figure out. And I think I've heard from other people as well that last third is quite tricky. And just to like, just not to panic and scrap a project at that point, because it's, yeah, I don't know, if anyone's listening to this and you're stuck on the last third, then it'll be fine. I think that's the thing I learned. Like, it seems like it's going to be a disaster, but it's actually, you just have to work through it.
Now that is it for this week's Writer's Routine. Thank you so much to Naomi Ishiguro. You can grab a copy of Common Ground using the link in the episode notes where you're listening, and over at writersroutine.com as well. It's feel good. Like, it's beautifully, stunningly written. It feels different. It feels like there's a special edge to it. It's a stunning tonic for how divisive things are at the moment and how we all need a little bit more compassion. Now, next week, we're chatting to Chloe James. Her new novel is Love in Lockdown, which is a very timely book. You can hear how she managed to write and publish it so quickly next week on the show. With Chloe James on Writer's Routine. Get yourself subscribed wherever you're listening to the show, and I will see you then for a brand new episode. Bye!